Good morning. I call to order the House Jobs and Economic Development Committee to order. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker moves the motion to approve the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes have been adopted. So we move to the first bill of the day. And that is Representative Clapton. Good morning, Representative Plaffman. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I move House File 3325 to be placed on the general register. So the bill that I have brought to you today is a very, very simple one that would simply change the name of the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program to the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. This has to come through the committee because it is named in statute. It is otherwise very simple to update the name. And I have with me Jean Keenan from LifeWorks to tell you a little bit more about what the program does.
Welcome, Ms. Keenan. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jean Keenan. I'm a service provider in and a member of the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program. Thank you for this opportunity. As you may remember, the Minnesota Displaced Homemaker Program is a network of six providers across the state providing family stabilization and pre-employment services to individuals, both male and female, who need to enter or re-enter the workforce due to abandonment, divorce, death, or disability of a spouse. Each of the providers covers a service area of 7 to 11 counties covering hundreds of miles, and many of these are resource-limited rural counties. Participants we're serving often don't have reliable transportation or gas money to reach us. Sometimes they don't even have a driver's license, so we must go to them. With the increase in funding that you provided through a direct appropriation last session, we were able to expand into new service areas, thus increasing access for participants. Additionally, we've instituted women's leadership programming, provided additional essential life skills workshops, and education in each of our service areas. We provided necessary staff training and increased direct support dollars available to participants. On behalf of the program, I'd like to express our sincere gratitude for that funding and assure you that we are working diligently to be good stewards of those funds. So facing one of these transitional events and without adequate income, some individuals see no alternative but to turn to the state for financial help. It has always been our goal to interrupt this cycle of poverty. We work daily to help displaced homemakers and their families stabilize, exercise resiliency, and become self-sufficient. Over the last several years, many of you and others have given us feedback on the name Displaced Homemaker Program. We have heard you. The term homemaker is quite antiquated, but it is also a statutory definition. For this reason, I appear before you today to request your support for HF 3325, to change the name of the program to Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. After much consideration, we believe this new name would more accurately reflect the nature of the good work we have been doing for many years to help participants be resilient and move towards self-sufficiency. The program will still provide the same quality services to the same consumers under our new name. We will continue to be an individualized and client-driven program that serves participants through a combination of activities, including one-to-one self-sufficiency counseling, weekly workshop series, and coordination with other service providers. Once enrolled, participants will still be eligible for services for up to 1 year, and the average length of time in the program has been about 40 weeks. The Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership will still continue to be a wraparound, comprehensive program that's voluntary and offered at no cost to eligible participants. A program participant who could not be here today has asked that I share her story with all of you, and I agreed to do so. I am a displaced homemaker. I am a mom to three beautiful girls, two of whom are still minors. Last year, my 20-year marriage came to an end. The last 17 of those were spent raising a family and tending to our home so that my husband could grow his business. I found out very quickly the true sacrifices I made by doing so. I had no money of my own. I had no work experience. My bachelor's degree was over two decades old and hadn't been put to use in nearly as long. My technology skills were dated. Who would ever hire me? During this tough time, I found a hidden gem called the Displaced Homemaker Program. In the beginning, I had no idea just how holistic their approach would be. It would turn out to make all the difference for me to successfully navigate this transition. I went to them with the very basic goal of learning how to use a computer for more than email and surfing the web. My confidence and hope for the future were at an all-time low. I figured if I could just learn to navigate Microsoft Excel and Word, I could probably get an entry-level job. I started computer training during the summer of 2019, and I did master Word and Excel. But under the direction of the self-sufficiency counselors, my confidence also started to blossom. I realized that not only was I capable of learning the basics, I had the mental capacity to do so much more. With the encouragement of the program, not only did I complete my 13-week computer training, I went on to apply and get accepted to graduate school for my master's in public health. My program won't start until this fall, but already the Displaced Homemaker Program self-sufficiency counselors are helping me network and make connections within the field that I would never have been able to make on my own. I am convinced that without the help of the Displaced Homemaker Program, I would indeed be laboring away at a dead-end job. There would be no hope in sight to ever catch up to where I would have been had I not given up my career for my family. Though the name is antiquated and is rightfully due for a name change, the program itself is just as relevant now as it was 30 years ago. My hope is that this program continues to receive bipartisan support, and when others similarly find themselves in a life transition, they will also be able to turn to the Minnesota Family Resiliency Partnership. Thank you again for your time and consideration of House File 3325, requesting a name change.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kinnan, for sharing your inspirational story and how the program really worked. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House File 3325? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this file forward. It's pretty basic, but I just wanted to comment on the program itself. During the interim, I did have an opportunity to meet with some of the people that participated in this program combined with some others, and it was really a neat story to see how they were able to move forward after a separation. And then I was also pleased to realize that one of the instructors was actually one of my constituents who I didn't know at the time. But so thank you for bringing this forward, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so very much.
Any further discussions? Hearing none, Representative Kaufman, will you please renew your motion?
Thank you, Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3325 be placed on the General Register.
House File 3325 has been placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none. Motion has been adopted. We now move to House File 3323. Thank you. Welcome, Representative. I move House File 33, House File 323 to be laid over. Please proceed.
Over, members. I'm Dwayne Souk, a member here, and actually proud to be a vehicle by which these particular bills get considered. I think that we as a society have great desire, great human emotion to want to do better, and yet we struggle with that in almost all regards. The issues of care and or assistance for people that can otherwise live without a full institution to reside in is one of the things that we do well, as to the extent that we as a society fund it and then facilitate for it. So this bill will provide stable, predicted funding for a number of facilities around the state. So I'll formalize this, because anybody that knows me, you know that if I go off on my own, it adds about 700 words to whatever is going to happen. So my bill provides money in this supplemental year for centers for independent living that are across the state. There are 8 centers spread around to try to facilitate and or meet the needs that provide service to people that could use this hand up. People with disabilities can stay in their home and oftentimes gain life skills, job skills, modifications to their homes to stay there and not go into expensive nursing homes and other facilities like that. The funding increase in my bill reflects the House position from last year's session, with the unusual conclusion of the session. A fair and open conference committee was usurped, and unfortunately, the Senate position of no additional funding for. That is clearly an editorial comment by somebody, but I think we all lived that, and we know that we stumbled to the end, and unfortunately, these funding streams were the ones that suffered from that particular set of processes. Kara Ruff is going to call people up to testify. These are people that are impacted by this funding and or benefit from the services that are rendered from that. And I will step out of the way and cut short my 700 words.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome. Will you please state your name and proceed with your testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Kara Ruff, and I'm the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles, which is the Center for Independent Living in Central Minnesota. And I'm also the legislative liaison for the 8 Centers for Independent Living that are called Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living. Centers for Independent Living are crucial because we serve people of all disabilities and all ages. It's a one-stop shop for people with disabilities, any type of disability, whether it's physical, cognitive, mental, emotional, chemical, sensory, are able to get services from birth to death. And the only requirement is that they have a disability. So there are 8 centers for independent living that are charged with serving the entire state. We're here with many people today from all areas of Minnesota to ask for your urgent assistance with House File 3323, which provides $750,000 in funding added to our base. For the past 3 decades, 8 CILs have been expected to provide services to people of all disabilities and all ages throughout Minnesota with between $1 to $3 million. Representative Gunther has been a longtime supporter of ours and helped us when we were nearly eliminated in 2003. We have been given a 5th mandated service to provide, also without additional funding. Again, not just one type of disability, but all, from mild to severe, from birth to death, in every county of Minnesota. An independent study conducted 3 years ago shows that the CILs need $18.2 million to adequately serve the state. We know that you have many issues before you, and we know that you have to make tough decisions. But I'm asking for you to give this the justice, the consideration, and the time that is truly required on behalf of over 500,000 people in the state of Minnesota. A few staggering statistics I would like to share with you. People with disabilities constitute the largest minority population in the state. And it's the only group any one of us can become a member of at any time. Almost 15% of Minnesotans have a disability and 24% of our veterans have a disability. 47% of people with a disability live below the poverty line. 44% of people with disabilities say they're not being allowed to live independently and against their choice, which ironically ends up costing the state of Minnesota a whole lot more. Two-thirds of people actively avoid people with disabilities because they're still uncomfortable and don't know how to act. Again, we urge you to give this the attention that it deserves. Historically, we have further segregated and marginalized people with disabilities with subminimum wage employment, group homes, institutions, and other indignities against their will. All of these options cost significantly more than the services of a Center for Independent Living, which we do at a fraction of the cost and actually empower people with disabilities to live with dignity, choice, and the ability to acquire the same skills and lifestyles as those without disabilities. CILs are unlike any other model. We provide services and supports in all areas of life that are consumer controlled. So each of the organizations has a staff and board comprised of 51% people with disabilities so that we're truly governed by those that we serve. In the past year alone, 36 individuals were relocated out of nursing homes and institutions, and over 1,800 were prevented the necessity because of our services, which in essence saved the state of Minnesota around $46 million. We did this with $3 million. We want to be clear, we're not here asking for a handout. We're asking for the legislature to fund what clearly is cost-effective and produces real results. To look at the facts, we bring individuals from dependency to independence, assist them in attaining education, homes, parenting skills, employment, financial stability, advocacy, and so much more. We must stop throwing money at large institutions who operate without accountability and without consumer control, and allow Minnesotans and veterans with disabilities the opportunity to become as self-directed as those without a disability. This is a serious issue, and we have been waiting decades for the help that we need. This is a critical issue in our state, and we're here with a solution that actually saves taxpayers' dollars. We ask that you give people with disabilities the respect and attention they deserve by funding what actually works, Centers for Independent Living. I have a couple consumers here with us today, and they are ready to testify about what the Centers for Independent Living have done in their lives. This is Travis.
Travis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Travis, and my social worker referred me to Independent Living Styles in August of 2017 to receive Independent Living Skills services. I had just quit my job working at the Holiday Inn and was stuck in a tough place emotionally. I was not receiving the support I felt I needed and was definitely feeling stuck in a rut. My independent living specialist started working with me on meal prep and cooking as well as grocery shopping. We would look at recipes and write a grocery list of what was needed versus what I had in the cupboard. We figured out how much money I needed for the items on my grocery list and compared it to my budget and the money I had in my bank account. We went to the grocery store and we would do some store comparisons on brands to keep within my budget and then purchase the groceries. My independent living specialists would help me with my budget by showing me how to go online and see how much I had in my bank account for the month. Then we would look at what I needed for expenses and planning for other things I wanted to buy. I knew what I wanted to save for and how much it cost. It worked for me on keeping receipts, writing down everything I spent and what was on and itemizing each expense. We also compared prices on my regular expenses. My independent living specialist also helped me by role-playing different communities' safety and emergency situations at home. When out in the community, my independent living specialist would quiz me on what to do in different situations, such as fire, tornadoes, and how to find a safe space. We would go over these situations until I was able to feel more comfortable about being prepared should an emergency situation happened when I was out by myself. I'm now much more comfortable going out in the community by myself instead of waiting for family to be available to go with me. I'm also more outgoing and sociable with my family. I don't feel as isolated. Everyone says I'm more willing to go out of my comfort zone than I was before, and I'm even going to new locations on my own. My independent living specialist helped me to connect to vocational rehabilitation services, and I was able to get a job that I really enjoy at Sam's Club. My mother and I told my independent living specialist about my desire to move out on my own at the beginning of this year. We tried to coordinate with a couple of other service providers in the area to find a supported apartment with no success. My independent living specialist told me about Independent Lifestyles housing program where I could live independently and have a 24-hour support that I needed. I met with a coordinator of that program and they helped me look at possible roommates. My independent living specialist went with me to meet with the potential roommate. We realized it would be a good fit and decided to move forward with finding an apartment. We were able to find a place that we liked pretty quickly. The county authorized transition services for me, so I was able to get the furniture and house goods. I'm so grateful for the support of that independent living, independent lifestyles has provided me with since I started working with them. I definitely wouldn't be where I am today without their help. I'm flourishing on my own and work is going well. I've even lost 40 pounds in the past couple of months. I found myself wanting to cook more independently, shop for healthier foods, and exercising in the gym in my apartment building. My mom has even said that my attitude towards life has been better and that I interact with people more. I'm very excited for where my future will take me.
Thank you so much, Travis, for all you do. So thank you so much. Any other?
Yes, I'd like to invite Corporal John Schneider.
Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. My name is John Schneider. I want to tell you my story. I was homeless. I was living in a hunting blind, eating squirrels in the wilderness. I served honorably in the Marines for 10 years. I was trained as a sniper. When I got out, I had a hard time transitioning into a civilian life. I didn't have the skills to live independently due to my disability. I was struggling with PTSD and undiagnosed epilepsy at the time. Then one day, I got a phone call from some guy who said he was from a center for independent living. He wanted to know if he could help, if I could come into the office and talk with him. This was the time that I was at the end of my rope. I had no faith in the system any longer. I wasn't looking for a handout. This gentleman simply wanted to know what my needs and my issues were. When an individual is continuously given handouts, they tend to lose the ability to help themselves. The first thing we accomplished was my housing needs. And this was day one when I met this gentleman. After we had gotten that, I'd gotten into my own apartment along with energy assistance, donated furnishings, kitchen items, and some cooking skills. Over time, I learned to advocate for myself, to get medical treatment, and to file for Social Security disability. The Marine Corps taught me to save my life. Minnesota Center for Independent Living Skills taught me how to live my life. The most important thing, I got my family back. My son lives with me, and my mother is again proud of me. I once again respect myself. Now, I'm in college pursuing a bachelor's degree in engineering. I currently hold a 4.0 GPA. I speak on the dangers of drugs and alcohol to minors in the community. I moved into my own house now, and now I own my own reliable vehicle. I have the honor of leading my tribe's ceremonial traditions as the Eagle staff carrier. I've also been promoted to chaplain of the American Legion post 2018. I consider myself a productive member of society once again. I owe Access North, Minnesota Association of Centers of Independent Living, a deep debt of gratitude. I had a huge mountain of issues to overcome. And the Center of Independent Living broke the overwhelming mountain down into achievable small steps that I can manage. I want to thank this committee and the Center for Independent Living for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Schneider, and congratulations for taking on engineering course.
Thank you.
Anyone else who wants to testify? Any further discussion from members? Representative Gunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to see you again and to hear from the people that you helped. I remember when Governor Pawlenty did zero you out, and that's after he said he would not cut the budget on the backs of the people that couldn't take care of themselves. And we were lucky to find some federal money and some other money, and we got back to almost where we were. So it is truly true that you do save the state money. I have seen it over and over.
Thank you so much, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I just wanted to thank the witnesses for being here. Your stories are so incredible and inspiring, and we just appreciate your taking time to be here and tell us more in personal detail of how this program impacts you and our state. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Again, I want to congratulate both the testifiers in your amazing story. Congratulations, and we're really proud of you. Help me understand, if I could, I don't know if this is maybe a question for you or the author, but the dollar amount, where did that kind of come from, and what we'll be using this for? Is it to expand the specialist program, more of them? And also my second question, and then I'll stop, but on average, I know Mr. Schneider has moved on now to his own house and everything else. Is that a typical story? Are they there for a few years? Are they there for a longer time? I just want to know the length of stay, and then what's the money going to get used for? And great work, gentlemen. Thank you.
Ms. Rohr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Baker. The money, as I stated, there's a study that was conducted 3 years ago that says Centers for Independent Living need about $18.2 million to adequately serve the entire state of Minnesota. Currently, we're at about $3 million, and so we're long, long and away from there. Because this isn't a funding year, we decided, instead of asking for an outrageous amount, to ask for what this committee, the House, gave us last year, which was $750,000. We could use $18 million, frankly, but $750,000 would be absolutely amazing. And Each Center for Independent Living has between 9 and 13 counties to serve, so they're huge areas that we have staff traveling on the road all the time. And so we need operating money just for general operations. We need it to get people to serve out in our most rural communities and be on the road to do that. We need to hire more independent living specialists because at our organization, we have a waiting list usually for services because we just don't have enough staff to serve the people in need, which again is costing the state triple the money. So it's really a travesty. We need to put the money where it's actually going to work and save dollars and allow people in Minnesota to live with dignity and respect and choice.
And how long do they stay?
I'm sorry. All Centers for Independent Living are community-based. We are non-residential. And so we have, Travis was in our housing program, for example, but that is where we go and negotiate with landlords, and we find suitable living places for them and then provide the supports in the community so he can remain independent. There's no set amount of time that a consumer might stay in our services. Some come with very extensive needs, and some come with just a few. We might have somebody who needs a ramp to get into their home after they're hospitalized or become disabled, and so we'll do that project and then we're done. For others, we need to help with finances, benefit, independent living, self-esteem, advocacy, you know, you name it.
Representative Haley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers for sharing your life journey. This may be a question for the author or maybe for Representative Gunther as well. I just wanted some background on, has this funding always come from the deed budget? Has there ever been a crossover to our HHS budget and any type of federal match or support in the HHS area?
Ms. Ruff.
Mr. Chair, we have always been with deed historically because we have been seen as a partner, I would say, to vocational rehabilitation services. And up until last year, we had a lot of grants that flowed through deed in partnership. And now, in addition, those have also been turned into contracts. So we've lost a lot of that grant funding as well. And that has impacted the centers greatly. Some have had to close their branch offices and lay off staff. So this is a really, really dire time for Centers for Independent Living.
Mr. Chair, can I have a follow-up? Can you tell me as well how many individuals you serve annually?
Ms. Rock.
There are varying degrees of service like I was describing, but we served over 10,000 individuals in a year between advocacy and information referral and community education and then the direct intensive services that you heard about today. At my organization alone, we served over 3,000.
Mr. Chair, one additional comment. I found that interesting when you said that you had to close some branch offices, and since this money flows through deed as a workforce issue, really, or workforce support, just down the road, something that I think we should look at. Why don't we co-locate in all of our workforce development centers if that's an issue for your staff, and yet we have these other facilities in most communities that support workforce development?
Ms. Ruff?
Mr. Chair, we tried that. We were collating for specific vocational rehabilitation supportive services. That was the for the past 11 years, we've had a grant with DEED to be able to co-locate our staff. And now they have taken those grants away, so we do not have the opportunity to do that any longer.
Thank you very much. Sounds like an opportunity for us to explore.
Thank you. Any further discussion from members? Representative Gunn.
I remember when I first was introduced to this program, they had a St. Paul office down here. And I was kind of sneaky, so I went in there and I didn't tell anybody who I was. And I sat in a chair and just watched how everything went. And I learned right away that this is more than just a group of people trying to do their thing. They're also a referral agent. I saw more people referred to other places for help, and it was really kind of good to see how they share together and for the benefit of their clients.
Representative
Sutton. I'm going to just give you all a little motivation. Oftentimes, this is closer than you think it is. And I think that that's the most important thing as we're sitting here struggling. I serve on a couple of committees, and we've got gigantic numbers in capital investment that, you know, each year you kind of pass through it, and you're checking this one and checking that one and that sort of thing. It is awfully easy for us to just let the numbers be our image of what it is we're doing. Most of us don't realize how tenuously close we are to needing these services personally. I've had strokes, I have a brain tumor, I'm losing my hearing, and I have difficulty with my balance. And that's not old age. These are organic disabilities that are just coming to me. I am very privileged. I have support mechanisms around me, which some of these folks don't enjoy. They don't have those immediate support mechanisms. That's what you're being asked to help supply, is to create support and fund support mechanisms so that they can live these normal lives. I, like I said, I'm very privileged. I only use that as an example so we know that even in front of us, this problem is walking around the hallways as part of what's going on. And it's but for the grace of God, I would be in one of those circumstances myself. But I do have the resources behind me to be able to walk past it. And so I think it's important that as you get down to that last set of decisions, this needs a big number. Maybe that big number should be there. We've been passing on it for a lot of years. This number 750 isn't just something that dropped. It's been there for a while, and we keep passing on it and saying, well, maybe we can do a little less than that. Actually, we are shortchanging what society can do for people that just need a little bit to get through the day a little better. So I would pray upon you to think about that and to try to be a little more generous, because you are personally deciding to be generous when you fund these things at an adequate level. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative, and thank you so much for sharing your personal statement with us. We're here with you, so thank you so much. Seeing no further discussions, House File 3323 will be laid over. So we now move to, that's the motion that we renew to lay over House File 3323. Thank you so much. We now move to 3375. Representative Ekman.
How are you? Roosevelt and Roosevelt. Roosevelt.
Yes. I'm looking for good morning, Representative Eklund.
Good morning, please, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3375 be re-referred to Ways and Means.
House File 3375 has been introduced and re-referred to Ways and Means. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill continues our partnership with Voice Fort Band of Voice Fort Band's Tarot Office, which provides career development and employment training. As rural populations get smaller, the need for skilled and certified employees becomes greater and greater. I have with me Mr. Reed LeBeau, Boyce Fort tribal attorney, with me to explain the success that resulted from our previous partnership and to explain what this appropriation would be directed towards. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Please welcome Mr. LeBeau, and please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Reed LeBeau. I'm the attorney for the Boyce Fort Band. When this started actually 3 years ago, thanks to the efforts of Representative Eklund, it was a brand new partnership that the state and the band had entered into. The Tribal Employee Rights Office is a federally created entity that is geared at providing job and career development for members of the band. When that started, it didn't begin 3 years ago, but when this grant was provided, we were able to provide career development opportunities for 44 individuals who went through our program. We were able and happy to report to the state that 16 of those were immediately employed upon completing the program. And of those 16 that were immediately employed, they went into masonry and or CDL, heavy equipment, transportation work. Of just those two careers, the income for the cement masonry is roughly $52,000 a year. And for the CDL Class A for heavy road construction, that roughly averages to $52 an hour. These are really significant jobs that we're putting people into in rural Minnesota. What we look and are hoping to do with another grant from the state is to focus more on certified programs. We know that we have a need for bookkeeping, accounting, back of the house operations, because we know that we are losing people that are currently doing those jobs through retirement. And it's difficult to try to attract people to want to come to more rural parts of Minnesota. So we appreciate your consideration. We appreciate the partnership that we've had in the past, and we look forward to continuing this relationship that has been successful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. President Gunn.
I would thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the unemployment level at Boyce Fort Reservation? What percentage of people there are unemployed?
Mr. LeBeau.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I can't tell you that number off the top of my head, but I'm happy to follow up with you.
I appreciate that.
Any further, Representative Sunday?
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the testifier. The people that become employed after training with this program, do they serve, or are they employed just specifically on the reservation, or are they out in the greater community as well?
Mr. LeBeau.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, thanks for that question. Some are employed on the reservation and others have left. But we of those that we're able to track, we know that some have stayed in the area as well. So it's, as you know, it's, I can only give you the raw numbers of the number of people that were employed, what the average salary is. The things I can't tell you, but I know everybody on this committee knows, is everything that comes with having a job and being employed, and the honor that people feel by having that work and that wage. So, thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Eklund, for bringing this bill. I think it sounds really good. We've heard a couple of good bills today, and I think they've all got their merits. I noticed that this one's going right to Ways and Means. Is it different than having a possibly including in something other later on? Could you just help me with the pathway and why would this one sort of be treated a little differently than the one prior to this? How does that work? And maybe you don't have that answer, Mr. Ackman, but just curious about that, or maybe the chair or somebody knows.
Yes, Representative Baker, this bill we can send it to Ways and Means, but we can still have it in our possession. So if that will help with the new process of which we've been adopting, how to move the bills, I think this creates opportunity to send it because it's it includes funding in the process. So this bill has not gone through, I believe, through Ways and Means.
So, Mr. Chair, then the prior bill we just heard, what is the difference between the two? So will the other one move to right to Ways and Means as well?
The other bill, yes, eventually will have to go to Ways and Means. So essentially this bill is still in our possession. By just sending to the Ways and Means, it will come back to us probably.
Thank you.
Any further discussions? I know that the whole process has been different. We used to have referral by memo, and that changed the whole process. And this is, we're adopting the new committee rules of processing the bill.
And with that, then, Mr. Chair, because I do want to better understand it, and I appreciate the changes that have been made, I think, because I'm still kind of confused, but will there likely be an omnibus bill from this committee this year?
Representative Beck, as you know, we don't have any targets that we have right now. So we could have a target that we may get, and we'll have an omnibus bill to include several funding. So right now, we don't have any targets.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Beckman, will you please renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I renew my motion that House File 3375 be referred to Ways and Means.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member.
Thank you, Mr. Lemon. Any seeing no further discussions or agenda items, I call for the adjournment of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. All those in favor?